So some people say that Wisconsin is a property tax heavy state. What does that mean? What are those property taxes paying for? Well, let's find out. I'm Gwen Gunther, and this is the third episode of Local Gov Matters.
I am Mark O'Connell, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Counties Association. Gwen, good to be here once again.
And thanks for inviting me back as well. Jerry DeShane, I'm the Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities.
Well, I've been enjoying our discussion, guys. So today let's talk about property taxation. What is property taxation? What are the services being paid for? And, you know, is the rumor true? Is Wisconsin a heavily property tax state?
Well, the answer is yes. We are a heavy property tax state. And what do the property taxes pay for? Cities, towns, villages, schools, counties, and all the various services we provide. We rely on property taxes heavily in this state. Our tax mix is a mix of income, sales, and property for the most part. Then we have some excise taxes and some sin taxes and other taxes, but those are the primary.
That's not the whiskey I drink, is it?
It's partly a small amount of
the
tax
small amount,
related
okay.
to that. But the problem is this. The property tax is not sustainable as a funding source for local units of government in the future. And you might ask, well, why would that be? I mean, we still have property. What's happening? Well, here's what we did in Wisconsin. We equated accumulation or acquisition of property to wealth. The more property you acquired, the wealthier you appeared to be. And so we attached a property tax to that perceived wealth.
When did that start?
Oh, 1800s,
long, actually
long time
before
ago.
Statehood.
Okay. Before okay. Jerry and I were, shortly after
we
were around.
Okay.
Right. So a long time.
I remember talking to George Washington about this over a beer.
And it worked for a long time because a person would acquire property. We'd attach a property tax to that to fund our schools and cities, towns, villages, and counties. But the individual had this underlying revenue stream called income, which allowed them to acquire that property, appear, and maybe actually be wealthy, and then pay a substantial amount of it toward the property tax. But 4 or 5 years ago, something happened. The first baby boomer retired. So we're continuing to look at an individual and their perceived wealth related to how much property they've acquired, yet they have lost the underlying revenue stream called income, which is allowing them to pay taxes on their perceived wealth. So that's a semi-technical explanation for we really are taxing people out of their homes. And that is why the property tax, with our changing demographics, and we are getting old really, really quick in this state.
I'm not.
No, I'm with Gwen. I'm not aging. I refuse.
I mean, we're moving from 13% of our population over the age of 65 right now to, in just a few years, 25% of our population being over age 65. And that's assuming that we have no changes in medicine which allow us to live even longer. Now, the likelihood that we're going to have those medicine changes or medical advances is, in my opinion, 100%. So we're going to go from 13% to much more than 25%, maybe even 28, 29, 30% of our population being over age 65, still wanting to stay in their homes, but not having the underlying revenue stream of income to support that.
So while these people are still being taxed, they're not...
They can't afford it.
They can't afford it.
There's no income to pay for it.
And they're not moving out of their home. So there's not a new person coming in that's got a new form of income to pay those property taxes as they're going up.
Well, and some would say, no, look, every time you put a house on the market, someone else is buying it. Well, if we're taxing people out of their homes, where are they going? Well, they're going maybe to my county nursing homes or private sector nursing homes, which are, they're generally speaking, expensive. So we have a segment of our population that is in, I'm not going to say it's dire straits right now, but if we look at the demographics, we're putting a significant portion of our population in a very difficult position as a result of the tax structure that we've imposed upon them. So we're suggesting that we need to modify our tax structure. We need to change our tax mix. We ought not be so reliant at the local level on property taxes. And fortunately, there are some really smart folks in the legislature that have said, yeah, I think we ought to do that. We ought to look at our structure.
Gwen, there was a study from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Rob Hinken, that looked at Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's subject to the same revenue system that Madison, Green Bay, Chautauqua, Cribbets, you name it, they all work under the same system. Well, Rob looked at Milwaukee and its 38 sister cities across the country, you know, the peers in size. We are absolutely number one in our reliance on a single source of revenue for local governments. There is no other city they could find that was as restricted as the city of Milwaukee is. And again, I'm not trying to beat the drum here for Milwaukee, but what Rob Hinken showed was that it's broken, folks. No other state looks at financing its local government operations in as narrow a fashion as Wisconsin does. The downside, Rob put it in very clear terms for me, although I'm not anywhere near as old as Mark keeps trying to tell me I am. I forgot where I was going with this. No. But he said, look at it as if it were your own investment portfolio, your own IRA. You diversify your revenue sources. You don't narrow them. And in Wisconsin, we've got an 18th century financing system. And, you know, we're trying to attract the Foxconns of the world. We're trying to build a 21st century economy. Our tax system is still way back there pulling the buggy. And that has to change.
Yeah, we have a 1950s tax structure where we tax things you can touch and feel and drop. But we're applying that to a new millennium knowledge technology-based economy, where by far and away, if our economy is going to grow, and while we are very heavy manufacturing in this state, and we love every manufacturing job we have, I think we've got the second most in the country, just behind Indiana, we love those jobs. But if our economy is going to grow, it will be because of the service sector, the knowledge sector portion of our economy. Yet our tax structure is not connected to that. I mean, some of our smart business friends would say government coffers ought to grow only to the extent the economy grows, which, I mean, there are some flaws in that argument, but if we assume it's true for a moment, that means that our tax structure and our economy need to be linked. And currently, they're not. We tax things you can touch and feel, but our economy is growing in the service-based sector. And we've got some ideas on how to resolve that matter as well, and there's other challenges to that as well. I mean,
back, we're going to talk about the new Ways and Means Subcommittee, where you guys both testified and talked about some of the changes that you'd like to see and how the state can move forward. So stay tuned.
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
Representative Mocco has been working all session to start a discussion on taxation changes in Wisconsin. And he and Speaker Voss worked together to make changes to the Ways and Means Committee structure. They created subcommittees. And you both testified at the very first hearing on the Subcommittee on Local Taxation, including property taxes. So what did you tell the members of that subcommittee, and what is that committee going to do going forward? What's their goal? What's their ambition?
Well, we told them it was broke. Fix it.
Yeah.
You know, it took a little longer than that, I think.
Well, and I'll let Mark kind of expand, but just a quick example. We've locked local governments into a starvation diet that is not sustainable and is not good for our economy. Just a quick example. Since the Great Recession, state government revenues have increased about 10%. Local government revenues have increased 4%. So if, you know, plowing the streets and providing sheriff's deputies is at least as important as providing the state patrol and building interstate highways, we've got to address that imbalance. And that's just step one. It goes far beyond that.
Well, I guess first I'd say, Gwen, Speaker Voss and Representative Mocco, I think, are exhibiting tremendous leadership in identifying this issue and being willing to tackle what is no doubt going to be a very difficult, very controversial item. Yet, if we want to position our state for future success, then our tax structure needs to be modified to put us in a position for possible success. And Speaker Voss clearly sees that. Representative Mocco clearly sees that. Representative Steffen, subcommittee chair, clearly sees that. So I'm encouraged by that. I mean, one of the things we told the committee is that we need to examine what it is we desire And then let's look at the challenges that are in the way from where we are to what it is we desire. For example, in our state, we talk a lot about job creation, and we want economic activity at the local level. By far and away, if we're going to have economic activity at the local level, local units of government are involved in that. We are working with the businesses. Yet our tax structure is not incenting us to do that. And what do I mean by that? Well, we generate revenue through property taxes. So if a business comes to a city or a county or a town and says, say, I'd like to add another turn lane off of County Highway Q into my business. I'm way down on the list on DOT projects. Could you help me out, city or county? We might currently, today, we would look at them and say, in pure fiscal sense, well, are you going to increase your footprint on your properties, which would create more building and increase the value for property taxes? Business says no. Well, are you going to add another building or another parcel if you get this? No. Are you going to go out of business if you don't get it? No. Well, from a pure fiscal sense, the city or the county might say, well, then what do I care? Right. I mean, we have no interest. I mean, will it increase your bottom line? Yeah, it'll increase it quite a lot. But we don't share in that. We don't care. So, and the business might say, well, I'll create another 25 jobs. And we'd say, well, okay, if they're going to buy houses in the area and we're going to build more property tax base, then maybe, but we're not incented for that.
Isn't this why we created TIF districts?
Well, it is, in part. But TIF districts really illustrate the problem Mark's talking about. And when he and George Washington and I were chatting over this over a beer, it worked in the 18th century when your property was really, that was your wealth measure. But in this day and age, that doesn't work. And yet, tax increment financing is a property-focused, property-based incentive system. The only way we can help a business at the local level is if that business needs to put sticks and bricks in the ground. We can help with the hardware. And there's absolutely no financial incentive for the county or for the city to help him with job creation or with sales increases, because there's no return for the city or the county on that.
And what we really should want, we might have a business making $100 a year. We at the local level should be in a position where we say to that business, we want you to make $1,000. We want you to make $1,000,000. We want you to make $1 billion. We want you to be successful. So you need another turn lane off of County Highway Q? Absolutely. Let's do that. But in order to get to that point, especially with tax or limits, restraints, freezes, restrictions at the local level for revenue, we have to modify our tax structure to incent the locals to want that business to succeed. Right now, we're not necessarily holding hands with businesses, but we ought to be. There's a couple of examples to the contrary. Alan Biko, county executive in Fond du Lac, is, I guess, behind the scenes, the primary reason that Mercury Marine is still a Wisconsin company. And he did that for a whole host of reasons, not the least of which is the betterment of society generally. But those examples are relatively few and far between. We should have in every corner of this state, local units of government, cities, towns, villages, counties, wanting our private sector businesses to succeed. While we have a substantial portion of our economy in Wisconsin in the public sector, if we're going to move forward, if we're going to be successful, the private sector needs to do really, really well. And we ought to have local governments wanting that.
Now, the state can get involved and the state can help businesses. They can give grants. They can give incentives and things like that. Is that what you're talking about, wanting to be able to do at more of a local level, at the county and the municipality level?
Well, for my part, I think no. What I'm really talking about is a tax system that is responsive to the economy. The reward for the local government is getting a piece of the sales and the income that take place there, or frankly, whatever comes next, whether it's value added or whatever. Right now, our tax system just says to Coleman, Wisconsin, the only way you're going to succeed is by building more buildings. That's the only reward in the system. And what Mark is saying, and I think he's right, is that's not the 21st century economy. We need to be focused on the whole package, sales, income, all of it. And that creates an incentive for the local government to work more closely with business and with job creators.
Okay. So what's next for this subcommittee? What did you hear? I distinctly remember Representative Steffen saying that they want to put something together and they want to have it to the whole Ways and Means Committee, I believe, by April 1st, so that they can have it looking forward and possibly go into the next budget.
Well, they have a difficult task. Almost all legislation moves and public policy moves incrementally. So to make big, drastic, large changes is very difficult. I mean, the last one that you might recall in this state was of, a gigantic nature, might have been Act 10.
Right.
Years ago now, eight years ago. So are we likely to get something like that? I think it's unlikely. I mean, the federal government just went through a major, major shift. I don't know that we have the environment in Wisconsin to create a shift of that nature. So we're going to have to look incrementally. Does that mean that there isn't enthusiasm in the legislature to get it done? No, it does not mean that at all, because I think there is. But we have to move slowly. I think there's a great desire on the part of the committee and subcommittee, and they have been very, very open in talking with the locals about ideas and concepts about the future. And I give the committee a great deal of credit. It's not about the here and now. It's how we position our state for success in 10, 20, 30 years. And a tax structure change today is going to put us in a better spot for success in the future. And they completely get that. I would look for some changes with continued look toward the future about how we make other small, medium-sized changes until we get to a good spot for possible success.
Well, and I think we should also tie it to there can be rewards. One example is if you take a look at how the sales tax works in other states, Wisconsin's property taxes are way too high. One of the reasons is our sales tax is quite low. What if you did a dollar for dollar, we're going to raise our sales tax a percentage, a fraction of a penny, but we're going to reduce property taxes by that much? You can. Frankly, I would argue that you should.
So it's a teeter-totter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Somewhat. I mean, but if you expand the basket of goods and services on which you apply the sales tax and possibly even lower the sales tax, and you include more services in that basket, you have now connected a portion of your tax structure to the economy. And now, as the economy grows, so will government coffers that we should then use at the local level to create an environment where the number one resource for private sector profit, which is smart young talent, what it is they desire. I mean, if we're going to succeed as a state, we need a lot more smart young people in this state. I mean, the number one resource for private sector profit to the future is not oil, water, steel, or paper pulp. It is smart young talent. So we need to ask ourselves, what is it that the smart young talent desires? Now, as old guys, Jerry and I, I mean, we grew up in an environment where it was cut taxes, take as little from me as possible. But the smart young talent of today is saying, you're going to take as little from me as possible? I don't make any money. So what are you taking? You're taking less? You're taking, I hardly make anything. What they want broadband everywhere you walk and breathe. They want transit. They want walkability. They want recreation opportunities. They want the things that local units of government invest in to make an attractive community.
They want internet north of Highway 29.
They want everywhere. I mean, try to keep a 20-something in an environment where there's no broadband. You can't do it. And yet that is, we're on the eve of a labor market shortage in this country and in this state. We need that smart young talent. What do we need to do to get it? Invest in our communities to make them attractive to that smart young talent. So, they're the number one resource for private sector profit.
So you talked about the tax overhaul that Congress just did, and we know some of the tax implications that could have. Will this be a driving force to help Wisconsin look at its tax base and say maybe we do need to start changing things?
Well, I think if anything, at the federal level, the fact that they did this, and never mind whether you like it or don't like it, the fact that they actually did it, it may give the state, various states, not just Wisconsin, license to believe that maybe we can do something kind of big here. It really can happen. I think that's probably the biggest lesson in regard to what could happen from the based on the federal action.
It's funny you bring that up. I had a private conversation with Ways and Means Committee Chairman John Mako.
Which is
Green
not
Bay.
Private now if you're going to reveal it.
Well, what fun is a private conversation if you don't tell everybody? Secrets are useless. No, and it wasn't meant to be a secret conversation. He'd been talking to U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan. And Paul Ryan's advice to Chairman Mako was dream big. You know, yeah, you will fall short. And Mark is right. This will be incremental. But don't start there. Start with what kind of a state do we want Wisconsin to be in the 22nd century? And then think, okay, what encourages us to get there?
To get there.
All right. Well, when we come back, we are going to talk about taxation in other states. What do other states do? How do they do it differently? And if Wisconsin's heavy on property taxes, I must believe that other states are heavy on other things. So we'll be back in just a moment.
The League of Wisconsin Municipalities advocates for Wisconsin's 600 cities and villages, speaking up for local democracy and common sense citizen-led government. Learn more at lwm-info.org.
So, if Wisconsin's heavy on property taxations, can you give me some examples of what other states do? How do they fund their local services? You know, if I'm registering a car in Iowa, is it the same as Wisconsin? And, I mean, how many people go to other states to shop because they don't pay taxes on their clothing?
There are 1,000 different. I mean, there is local option sales tax, there's local option income tax, there's payroll tax, there are local transportation registration fees, wheel taxes of sorts. There is, some states have no income tax, but it's maybe collected at the local level. It is, the sales taxes are generally speaking one that is commonly looked to as a alternative or a shift away from property taxes. And many times you might travel around the country. It's really nothing to pay 7, 8, 9% sales tax. And in some localities, 11 or 12% sales tax because there's a local on top of that. And yet people are still purchasing whatever it is they wish to consume.
Well, and I think you need to back up and take a look at Wisconsin. Are we gaining or are we losing on the measure that matters? And Mark brought this up earlier. The measure that matters is how many smart young people are moving to Wisconsin. The answer is on net, none. They're moving away, not in big numbers. Wisconsin is still a very attractive state from an environmental perspective. We have great school systems. We have great recreational opportunities. But we're not attracting people like Seattle, Washington is, or Los Angeles, God help us all, is. My son lives in Los Angeles and hates it. That's another story. But that we really need to look at the measure. Not whether or not our property tax bill hasn't moved in 10 years. That's not a measure of progress. We need to measure our progress by, are we replacing all of these baby boomers that are sitting around reminiscing about the conversations we have with George Washington? Are we bringing in the 20-somethings, the 30-somethings who become the entrepreneurs, who become this, become this, become this? And I encourage people to go to the Public Policy Forum, the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and read that report on Milwaukee's tax structure, because it will tell you what other cities are using. And there's some very good ideas in there. You know, the obvious one is sales tax, but there are many, many others.
So when you say that Wisconsin as a net is not gaining the millennial generation and the younger generation, are there parts of Wisconsin that are doing well in comparison to other parts of Wisconsin that are doing poorer than others?
Yes. Madison is doing terrifically. Thank you very much. Madison is what young people want. There are things to do here. It's a beautiful environment. There's a vibe to it that's somewhat hard to describe. I think people ought to keep in mind that Epic, the big software company that's out in Verona, employs how many, 10,000 people now? I don't even know the number. A significant majority of them commute to downtown Madison. They want to live on the Capitol Square. We're seeing a huge resurgence in our central cities. People want to live where there are things going on. There's a University of Wisconsin report. Randy Stoker recently went out and identified a dozen, both large and small, cities throughout Wisconsin that are doing it right and are actually attracting and keeping millennials. So they're examples.
Yeah, there's I mean, if you look around the country, and there are studies that will indicate this, Austin, Boston, Seattle, Washington, D.C., they're attractive to the smart young talent. And then there's medium cities, and there's even small municipalities that attract talent. When you look at the elements of those municipalities or areas that attract talent, do we have the capacity to have some parts of our state be those kind of entities? Absolutely. Madison is a clear example. I mean, they've got a lot going for it. But the Fox Valley, same thing, both upper and lower. Chippewa area, the La Crosse area. I mean, there's pockets everywhere. And, I mean, fortunately, a lot of our policymakers absolutely see this, the governor as well. It's one of the reasons, I think, that he's advancing the initiative to have, you know, broadband basically everywhere. We ought to have that. And not to get in, you know, too off topic, but having broadband is absolutely no guarantee of economic success. But not having it is pretty much a guarantee that you cannot succeed. So we, in our state, and we're different than, we like to be compared to Minnesota. And that's natural. I used to say that there's a lot of differences. I mean, we have a professional football team. Minnesota doesn't. Can't say that anymore, I guess. but anyway, Minnesota's got major population centers. Here in Wisconsin, we're very different. You can't drive more than 20 miles without having a population center of some sort. So we're different in that regard. We need to recognize that and embrace it.
Yeah,
but we
absolutely
can. And we can be one of those places that's attractive to the smart young talent. And it isn't necessarily tax structure. Tax structure might be a mechanism to generate the revenues that we invest in our communities to make them attractive to that talent so that the private sector can utilize that talent and do well. And I don't want anyone listening to this podcast to get the impression that the cities, towns, villages, and counties are out trying to create a tax structure to generate more revenue. That's not what this is about. What we're about is modifying our tax structure so we have the dollars necessary to invest in our communities so that our private sector can succeed and we're in a position for future success as a state.
Sounds good to me. All right, well, that's the end of today's podcast. Thank you so much, guys, for coming. And additional links for those documents that you talked about, Jerry, we'll make sure that we post those so that people can find those. And everyone can always go to thewheelerreport.com to get additional information and check out podcast details. And make sure that you subscribe to our new podcast on your podcast app so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thank you.